time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
From a competition to a pleasure run and all the stops in between, we cover all here at Coon Hunting Media.
Houndsman Advantage is a proud sponsor of the Coon Hunting Media Podcast. Houndsman Advantage is the premier digital scoring solution for the competition hunter. The app gives the necessary tools to score in competition or track your dog's hunting performance while on pleasure hunts. Imagine the benefit of having this tool at your fingertips on every hunt. Some of the features included within the app are a scorecard view, a summary view with tree timers for up to four dogs. There is no more calculating split strike and tree points manually. They are preloaded within the app. Cumulative scores will be automatically totaled with current plus, minus, circle, or deleted points after each scoring situation. The app includes the full rules for UKC, PKC, Pro Sport, and AKC. A search function is included which allows you to find specific rules instantly. The app allows you to scratch or withdraw a dog at any time during the cast. When the app is running under the UKC rules, it will automatically scratch a dog that has reached the scratchable amount of minus points. The app includes a kennel function for personal information such as registration numbers and entry cards. You can also store analytics on your dog's accuracy, win percentages, and much, much more. Even though the app has been tailored with the competition hunter in mind, the pleasure hunter has not been left out. You can set up pleasure hunts that track up to two dogs' performance at a time. You can keep totals on accuracy, whether good or bad. This will be broken down to the game scene, dens, slicks, and so on. When you register on the app, you are given a one-week free trial. Within the app, navigate to the news and update section. There, you will find a video that will walk you through how to use the entire app. Don't lose a cast because you didn't know the score or you had the wrong score. Give yourself the advantage, the Houndsman Advantage. The app is available for download at the App Store and Google Play.
Cajun Outdoors is the official light sponsor of Coon Hunting Media Podcast. Cajun Lights has been in business since 1986, making them one of the oldest hunting light companies in the industry. Any listeners from this area knows the level of quality and reputation that came with the Cajun Light. Cajun Outdoors is quickly reclaiming their spot at the top of the modern hunting light industry. Their recipe for success is listening to customers' needs and wants. If you're looking at a Cajun light and don't see exactly what you want, pick up the phone and call the owner, L.W. Nixon. He will make the light that you want become a reality. Customization is not a problem with Cajun lights. You don't have to worry about cheap foreign parts from box stores. There are no worries about tariffs. All their lights are made right here in North Carolina in the great USA. The key mission statement of Cajun lights is, when you as a customer spend your hard-earned money with us, we'll stand behind what we sell. We will be here for years to come. The current light lineup is the premium light that is tailored specifically to the competition coon hunter, the Cajun Blinder. It comes with a choice of either bright white or natural main beam with four levels of brightness. Super bright dual white walk lights with spot flood combo for great visibility while walking and searching. Super bright red light with high-low option. Super bright amber with high-low option. Intense bright green laser. Burn time on high is 5 to 6 hours. Clip mounted for easy removal and changing of various hats. Weighs 18 to 21 ounces depending on hat style. The other quality lights they include are the Cajun Rogueroo, the Cajun Bayou 2, the Cajun Micro Gator. All Cajun lights come with a 2-year warranty along with a lifetime labor warranty. Most of the guys at Coon Hunting Media have ran Cajun lights since childhood. Cajun lights, try one and experience an elite light from a brand that has been around for years. Call them at 888-773-3080 or visit their website at cajunlights.com.
Briar Creek Kennels, feed and hunting supply store, owned by Chris Girth, located in Hemera, Indiana. Briar Creek carries all your pet supplies and is the headquarters for all your hunting dog gear. Never get caught in the dark. They carry Outlaw Lights, Superior Lights, and their own Briar Creek Light brand. They are an authorized Garmin and Dogtra dealer. They offer hunting apparel by Yoder Nylon, Southside Hunting Gear, Dan's, Razor, and their own Briar Creek branded gear. Dog boxes include Old Dry Pond and Diamond Deluxe, AGM thermals, engraved nameplates, dog collars, and leads are just a few of the many other offerings you can get from Briar Creek. Visit the store in person or shop online at www.shopbriarcreek.com or check them out at the major events. Their direct business number is 812-383-9489. Briar Creek Kennels Feed and Hunting Supply Store. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Coon Hunting Media Podcast. We have got the boys here at the basement location, as usual, and we got our good friend, Mr. Nick Mobley, with us on the phone. How are you, Nick?
Doing good.
Good to have you with us again tonight. So before we get started, Johnny will give us a quick verse of the week.
So in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, down in verse number 11, says, when I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as also I am known.
Ooh, he's telling us all we need to grow up and act like men.
If you are looking for a reliable, safe, clean, and comfortable transporter for your dog, then you need to contact Muddy River Transport. They offer a premium dog hauling experience where your dog's safety and comfort are top priority, and they will go above and beyond the competition. They use their advanced ozone treatment and sterilization machine to thoroughly clean their van at the completion of each run. You can rest assured that your dog will be traveling in an environment that is clean, safe, and hygienic. Their van is climate controlled. All kennel spaces are comfortable, spacious, safe, and secure. Your dog will be comfortable and stress-free during transport. The drivers that will be moving your dog are trained professionals with lots of experience in this field. They are friendly and dedicated that your dog's safety and comfort are top priority throughout their trip. Communication is top-notch. You can rest assured that you will get route updates, dog check-ins, and projected times of arrival, all while taking into consideration your busy schedule. If you are looking for a transport option for your dog and want a stress-free experience with the confidence that your dog will be in a clean, safe, hygienic environment, then call Muddy River Transport today to give your dog the best ride of their life. They believe their customers' dogs deserve to be treated as if they were their own. They are not just dog haulers, they are active houndsmen. They hunt just like you do and participate in all the major events. Remember the mission statement: travel safe, travel clean, travel comfortable. Every trip, every time with Muddy River Transport. Contact us on Facebook at Muddy River Transport Group or call 1-402-274-7558.
Coon Hunting Media is proudly sponsored by Little T Squallers. Them are the words every competition hunter loves to hear. Your winning coon has just been found. Little T Squallers, owned and designed by Tim Tempton, has set the bar for high quality, dependable, and unmatched performance. From pleasure hunters to extreme competitors, he covers it all with his five elite models. Original Little T, the Triple Threat, the Double Shot, the Pro Series, and the newly designed Bell Ringer. If you want to enter the woods with confidence, contact his office at 423-562-5333 and become elite.
Saddle Up Canine Cryo is owned by Mr. Bill Scheninger. Bill is located in Delta, Ohio. Don't miss out on the opportunity to keep that special stud dog forever. His services include semen collection, freezing, side-by-side shipping, and semen storage. Bill is also the owner of one of the best-known plot kennels in the country, Saddle Up Plots. Saddle Up Plots is home to UKC, PKC, AKC, WTDA, Grand Knight Champion, PR Saddle Up Lazarus. Lazarus accomplished the following accolades in 2021. He was UKC World Champ Plot, Plot Days Isaiah Kid Winner, Purina Breed Winner, Autumn Oaks Breed Champion, APA Breed Days Winner. Fresh chilled and frozen semen is available. Contact Bill directly for all pricing and services information for Canine Cryo and Saddle Up Plots. Bill's phone number is 419-467-7689. Saddle Up Plots, making plots rise again.
We're going to jump in, and Nick has had a great idea. We've been talking back and forth quite a bit, and he said, you know, going back to some of our training episodes that we did way back when, and we just get to rattling on and talking, and he's kind of like, hey, let's sit down and do some stuff secondhand, like let him ask us some questions. So you listeners may get some
wild answers.
Yeah, wild and off the wall. Do not do anything that Stacy says do.
Viewer discretion is advised.
Well,
so
do not try at home.
Come on. It's
so before we get started,
parental vision.
Nick sent us some. He sent us some pictures the other day of his most recent bear hunt. Tell us a little bit about that, Nick.
That's crazy.
That was some good stuff.
That was.
So this past Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we were down in South Georgia. Their bear season comes in the last two weekends of September and the first two weekends of October. And we were able to go down there and have a pretty successful bear hunt. It was a good time. We have an organization that we do a lot of stuff with called KOK. It's the Courageous Outdoor Kids. And they have kids that have disabilities or maybe have a terminal illness, and the hunting club I'm affiliated with and hunt with, they've been doing it for probably 7 years now with this organization, or since they were founded. The gentleman that hunts with us every year was with another organization, and he branched out on his own, and it's been a true blessing, because kids, especially kids that are have terminal illnesses and stuff. It's been amazing to me. They'll go in, you killed a bear, and they're looking at it, and they're excited, and they look around and say, what are we waiting on? Let's go kill another one. It's somebody else's turn, and you're like, enjoy this. But it's been a life-changing experience to be involved with the KOK, and they do a great job. It's a great organization. If you're not familiar with it, Courageous Outdoor Kids, go follow them on Facebook, check them out. They do a lot of good stuff, but it was a great hunt, had some good dog work. You're hunting small blocks there around Okefenokee, and basically everything, you have to cut it off before it gets over in Okefenokee, because Okefenokee is an Indian word for trembling earth. And if you've ever been in Okefenokee, you'll know you take one step and you sink up to your neck. And,
oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty nasty. Pretty nasty place.
Is this located in Orangeburg, South Carolina?
We went right by Orangeburg.
Yeah,
but,
I've been there.
So are these kids, unlike me, if I was there, I would have probably been wanting to ride in your pocket the entire time. They probably got some bravery about it to them.
They are fearless.
I can see it.
They are fearless. It's been, like I say, the only word I can describe it with, it's been a blessing to be involved with that group.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, you imagine what they got to experience, something that there is no way they would have got experience in any other circumstance.
Yep, and this, every one of them, a couple years ago, we had a young girl that went with us, and she was 17 years old, and she came here to North Carolina for that hunt, and she was legally blind, and they actually had a camera that mounted on top of the rifle scope so she could see the bear. And so she killed her bear, and she had the best personality of anybody you've ever met. And like the day after she killed her bear, there was a deer going across the field like 200 yards, and I missed a deer. And she come up behind me and put her arm around me. She said, Mr. Nick, she said, I can't see 2 foot in front of me. What's your excuse? But like I say, the only word I can describe it is it's a blessing to be involved with Mr. Tommy and his whole crew. It's always a fun time. But the bear hunting was good. We got some good dog work in. I think we ended up killing 4 over the 3 days we were there, and killed one with a tracking collar on it.
I saw picture was – now, is that – is that like in the goose world, is that like a big deal? I know it's, you know, always a big deal to get them banders and stuff.
Yep, it's a very, very big deal. And actually, the little boy in that picture I sent y'all, he was the one that killed it. So
normally when we shoot stuff with trackers on it, we start panicking.
Yeah, have you ever watched Yellowstone? That would be us.
Yeah, we start panicking. we're not high-fiving. We're trying to find a way to get out of prison.
I knew we weren't supposed to be in this sanctuary.
That's right.
We're joking. That's a joke.
Yeah.
But I will say, I've got another testament for the Elite Nutrition pick. So I've got a male plot. He's 5 years old. Earlier this year, we were hunting. I mean, he is becoming a heck of a trail dog. And all of a sudden, I just saw a sudden decline in him. And so after talking with y'all and finding out what y'all were seeing with y'all's dogs that had the tick-borne diseases, I carried him, had him tested, and he tested positive for Ehrlichia. And so I started him on the Elite Nutrition's the Rebalance to Canine Guard and the Happy Dog Plus, and he'd been on it 2 weeks. And this first time he's been hunted, and he did really well. So, and he did better than the last 2 times I had turned him out, because he actually pulled up slick. And I can't really say that he was slick. He was by himself, and I mean, just dazed and confused. and I didn't see any of that out of him. Now, he was ill. Which he doesn't travel well. He's got little man syndrome, but other than that, he did. I'm gonna say he's close to normal, and that was only after 2 weeks of the treatment.
Now so, I've seen that with the Ehrlichia, the ill part. We had several done that, but they'll come out of it though. Once you get them over it, they'll come out of it.
He's always had a touch of it. He's had, I think, when he was a young dog, he got eat up in a dog box and by another dog, and that's one thing about pack dogs that when one of them starts, they all want to start. They all want to jump in, and I think he got a little bit of that when he was young. And when it don't matter if the dog box is full or he's the only one in the dog box, when you put him in the dog box, he's going to growl and let everybody know he's there. But it's total little man syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
But
and the other thing, too, when you're dealing with bear dogs, those dogs, they've got to be a little bit – grittier anyway. To
grit ain't the word.
Yeah, you don't walk. It's crazy. I'm not walking.
They gotta
up
be
and,
mental.
Yeah, I'm not walking up and grabbing a hold of a bear that's sitting on the ground looking at me like that, wanting to kill me. And they don't care.
They gotta have a shot of Stacy Thompson in them.
So that's.
Oh yeah.
No. Now, as far as the listeners go, I know you just said after talking to us about it. For all the listeners, Nick is the man when you got questions with Elite Nutrition. I mean, he's guided us through everything. So yeah, we are the ones doing it, but we've been doing everything the way that you tell us to do it. So, and it's working. It's working extremely well.
Ain't no weed up though. I'll bring my dog here and drop him off.
That is true.
Well, you got to think about it. You said ill. I mean, every joint in that dog's body is
hurting,
inflamed. Mm-hmm. Every joint, every knee, every muscle, every shoulder socket, everything's inflamed in him. I mean, I'd be ill too if I was hurting like that. Also, with that being inflamed like that in all my joints.
Yep, and I can see it after hunting him a few days. I can tell he's sore when he's a smaller dog. When I carried him to the vet, he was 42 pounds. He's always been a picky eater, but that was something I noticed after I started him on the Canine Guard and Happy Dog Plus is powder that you put over the feed every day, and I noticed he started gaining weight immediately, and he was actually eating a little better. So, and the Happy Dog Plus is a prebiotic, and it's really good for their immune system and their gut health. And I can tell that if nothing else, that has helped him. So, because he's probably, I'd say he's put on at least 5 pounds because he's more muscular than he was, and I can tell that it's really helping him all the way around.
Well, yeah, that's like and I use Joker as a example. You know, we ran him through, that was what, end of February, 1st of March. He ran the full cycle, so he finished all of March, April, all of, he finished at the end of May, and I've just, the progression that here in the kennel, which you and I've got him on some other stuff where he had the accident up there at Black and Tan Days, but he's bouncing off the walls. He don't act like the same dog. His muscle tones came back. It's just been astronomical how he acts different than he did. So
it has helped his vocal cords too.
I think it has. I think Stacy's up here shaking his head no. I think it has. You heard him at 900 yards the other night.
I heard him out the back door.
I mean, on that hunt the other night, he was.
Well, I never hunted with him. But I never hunted with him before, though.
Well, yeah, but you were still used.
Man, I never hunted when I hunted a hunt. I had, you guys made them draw, but I wasn't really around him then.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell a big difference just in the way he acts.
I made Hudson send me videos.
Yeah, Stacy, this is why we like him for a handler. He's not hunting the dog any. He decides he's going to take him to the hunt. Hudson had him. He had him looking pretty good, and he went to a hunt the other night, and he said, send me a bunch of videos so I can listen to him coming on the tree and stuff, and he goes and wins a hunt with him. First night, he takes him out. That's how he operates. But, all right, so let's jump in. And,
I have a better win success than losing.
Yeah, you do.
I've been blessed there.
Yeah, that's the one thing he does. Johnny and I was always saying he's always had so much torment of everything he does, that's God's way of blessing him because he just wins when he goes. So let's just jump in and Nick, kind of tell the listeners how you wanted to kind of gear this up, and then we'll just see how it goes. We don't have a clue what we're gonna get through.
Might be a two segment thing.
He yeah, we may be a whole series, depending on what the listeners, if they like it.
Okay. And give us feedback on it.
So, I've got a kennel full of young dogs. I knew I was wanting to start a couple puppies last year, and so I had talked to several people, and this goes back to episode 17 and 18 that y'all did earlier. So if you haven't listened to those, that will be a good starter for this episode, because it's going to give you a little more feedback on how to pick a puppy out and different little training styles and stuff. But we're going to get more into the training styles. But I got these pups, and I ended up with more. I'm a man of my word, and I've had talked to several people about pups. One person told me, said, hey, I think I got them all spoken for. I said, okay, that's fine. And ended up, I bought two pups off of Chad Moses, two plot pups, and they're both doing really well right now. And I had talked to Mr. Bill Scheninger about pup off of Lazarus, and got a six-month pup off of him, and then this other pup come available. So ended up with four pups last year that I was starting for on coons, not counting my bear dog pups that I was starting. I've had two of those that I was starting. And now I'm getting into they're all over a year old. They're all running. They're running track. They're treeing a couple of them, the two Moses pups and the black and tan that's off of Jimmy Reese's or Aaron Gray's Joker dog. They've all been in a coon pen, and they touched on that a little bit in episode 17. But I feel like there's a lot of people out there that are intimidated to come to an experienced handler or experienced dog man and ask some of the questions and some of the things that I've talked with Stacy and Jason about that I've seen in these pups. How would you handle that? And I might not always agree with it, but I'm a student to the game, and I like to see everybody, because the pup I've got right now might not respond to what I learned from all of y'all, but the next pup I get 2 years down the road might be exactly what you told me you were dealing with. And that's kind of what I want to get into in this episode, is how do you deal with these issues? And you've already covered how you pick a pup, and we'll get into that a little bit. I mean, but I want to go from, so if you're a pleasure hunter, you might be a little more patient with a dog that gets hung up on track. Or a dog that is, we're going to touch on everything, and we can kind of angle it both ways. But y'all talked in episode 17 about going from puppy to winter circle, but there was a whole lot of area I felt like that we could elaborate on, and that's where I wanted to go with this episode.
That sounds fair enough. I guess you want to just jump in and start kind of putting some scenarios out there, and we'll see, because we're definitely not trainers, but we have we went through a lot of pups.
We have theories.
We have theories. We test our theories.
We've tested them. Some right, some wrong, some lucky.
So
a lot of trial and error here.
So where do you want to start at? What would be the first thing that we would want to talk about happening?
Well, and y'all all say you're not dog trainers and stuff, but I think this past year, it should be a testament to what y'all have done with a lot of young dogs, and y'all have cared a lot of from Rip to now Joker, Snap. I mean, and y'all have got a lot of hands in on these dogs, but y'all are doing a lot of winning. I mean, there's very few hunts that y'all go to that y'all don't have a big show, and I mean, there's very few people that can say that they had to almost stop and get a U-Haul to bring back their trophies. So
that's a good problem to have.
It's a very good, but it's a testament, and that's why I felt that y'all would be a good group to ask these questions. But so I'm gonna actually go through some issues that I'm having now, and I'm seeing, and it's got me scratching my head, and I'm like, this might be something great to that other people were having, that if they listen and they could learn something. But so you get a pup and you're starting him. How do y'all start your pups? Do you start him with another dog, or do you single him out off the giddy up?
We'll probably differ on opinions there here. So
yeah, knows? I mean, for me, I guess it comes down to it. First thing you want to ask yourself, what's your end goals with the dog? You want to go win on truck, or you want to have a pleasure dog? You want to have just an average competition dog, or what are you looking for? First thing that I'd do, I always like to see if pup can do it on his own. Starting off, if he can do it on his own, why does he need help? But and if the pup can't do it on his own, which is 99% of them, then you would have that dog would need to be with a group that can get him going. And then I would single him out as quick as possible.
Okay. What's anybody else's thought? Stacy and them.
So when I'm working my young dogs, when I pick pups out, I like a noisy pup. If I've got one that's sitting in the pen, it's barking all the time, treeing birds, treeing house cats, whatever, that pup, I'll try it. And I'm bad at putting them into a squirrel hunt. I'll put him in the morning, daytime a little bit, get him going a little bit, and then start taking him out. If he's doing anything by himself, I'll try to work him. And I still will, I'll put a dog with him some here and there and get him more confidence on treeing. But once that dog starts doing anything, I want to break it out by myself.
And I guess, the best advice I can give, if you're in a situation you can let that dog just run loose, that's the best thing you can do.
Absolutely.
I mean, because a lot of people, that sucker is sitting in the pen until you're ready to go hunting.
But the reality to that is, I agree with that 100%. But
most can't.
Most people cannot do that.
No, they can't.
Even us. I mean, I remember back some of the better dogs growing up that we had as kids. We had an uncle that lived 20 minutes from where we are. We used to keep horses. We'd go out there and we rode horses every day. There was an old man out there that was from, he was a true cowboy. He was in Tennessee, but he was a true Texas cowboy. He had an old gated horse and an old gated mule. And that man kept 50 dogs. And I don't know how many dogs over the years that my dad would take a year-old dog out there and leave them with Paul Heron for 6 months. And that old man would go out on that mule, and them dogs he had them, they'd train to a horn and everything else, and he would go up in the flatwoods and ride for miles, and he didn't care what they run, what they did, but you could guarantee they'd be trashy when you got them back. Oh, but yeah. You guarantee when you went hunting, when they come out of that place, they was ready to go, because to the one thing, they had spent time with dogs that was going. I mean, they was being pushed to go because there was 30 more dogs, 40 more dogs out there. It was a sight to see.
Yeah.
I'll remember it to the day I die. We could go to my uncle's house, and you could sit on his front porch, and you could hear him up in the flatwoods riding and hear them dogs running for hours. And about 10 o'clock at night or whatever, you'd hear him blowing that horn. And then he'd come through about 2 hours later, that whole pack of dogs would fall into the house. But that was just getting them started. Same as running loose, because he lived on a 300-acre farm, didn't have to worry about them getting ran over every day and all that stuff. So that's a big deal.
Because, I mean, essentially, when you're letting them run loose, what that's doing is they're getting all of their new stuff out of the way. So by that, yeah, so you think about it. If you get a dog and the first thing that they're doing is they're sitting in the pen, then you start to take them hunting. Well, you take him
hunting. They got to figure everything out.
He's figuring out what that log is. He's figuring out what that leaf is, what it smells like. When you let him run loose, all that is done, essentially.
But now, and Johnny, see what he says on that too, but as far as the kind of to the question, I personally, on a young dog, I have zero issue with taking him with another dog. But now, if that dog starts showing signs to me that it might be capable of doing something by itself, then, yeah, I would like to take him by itself some. Yeah. But I got zero issue with a young dog. Me and Johnny talks about it all the time with these pups. We don't really care what they're doing, just long as they're out there.
Right.
You kind of go with low expectations for a little while. That make sense at all?
Yeah, you got to have I like to start one with a dog just to get it to going.
And, feel confident.
And get it to where it's treeing. And I don't care to pet dogs up and do things like that when they get going. When they go to where they're splitting off, running tracks by themselves, starting to tree by themselves, things of that nature, then it's time for that dog to have some one-on-one time. Now, With that being said, there's going to be a point in that dog's life where he's going to hit some tracks that he can't handle. And you got two choices. You go in there and run that dog off of that track that he can't handle, or you put him with an older dog that shows him how to work that track. And that goes back to, a lot of people say pleasure hunter is a competition. Well, more times than not, a competition hunter is going to go run him off and make him find something hotter. But if you're hunting at 3 o'clock in the morning and it's terrible, terrible hunt conditions, and you got a dog that can work that track and tree that coon, and them others is blowed out through the world, and you can't get them, none of them on the paper,
you probably just won the late round.
You probably won the late round. It's kind of...
It's a live by a sword, die by it.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's either or.
I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, at that moment in time, you want that dog. But in another way you look at it, I mean, like, it's like anything in any sport. There's all different types of situations. In that situation, I want that dog. I got to take that track and work it. Mm-hmm. But also what you think about it too is the other round was at 10 o'clock. Coons was on the ground. Coons was moving. Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you something.
You know what I mean?
And I'll tell you something else, though, that we run into, and anybody that's training dogs for competition, they have to deal with this. You like to hunt with your buddies, and we do want to hunt them young dogs like that, like we talked about with the dog, get their confidence built up. And then we want them by themselves. We all sit here as like trying to figure out how to drop dogs because – we do get to that point of this dog needs to be by itself because he or she's in that spot, and then it's hard. It's hard hunting.
It is.
I mean, it's not that you got you go out with your buddies and tree coon come to the house.
If it was easy, everybody'd be doing it.
And we gotta be picky where we go to because you're on a lake. You can't walk 45 minutes in there to cut a dog.
No,
to be a 2 hour.
And it's hard to run them out too.
You're 2 hours from a tree. It's 800 yards. And then mm-hmm. you got to get another dog cut it. You can't.
I mean, it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, and back to what Johnny was talking about when they hit that one. It's going to come a time where that pup's going to hit that track and he's going to sit there and he's going to beat and he's going to beat and he's going to beat. When he's talking about competition and pleasure hunters, more likely when you see a dog doing that, if I was a pleasure hunter, I'd put him with an old dog that can move that track. Okay. And he'll depend on him. But if you're a competition hunter, you really not necessarily want that because then that dog is going to start depending on other dogs to help his problems.
Mm-hmm. And over the years, many young dogs I've started, 90% of them, I'll see when they get going, they hit a point there, they either tree or run, one of the two. They'll be doing both of them, and they'll just quit doing one and start doing the other. Mm-hmm. They'll run a tree and leave a tree and run their track and start running. A lot of times I'll bring another seasoned dog with them to hold them there to kind of show them what to do.
Yeah,
try to get them through that little stage they go through. Usually about 2 year old when they start, a little less.
I'll just give you, when I was working in Chattanooga last fall, Kyle called me every other night, probably. And Rip was going through some stuff, and we'd talk and this, that, and other. And then he come through it and made an exceptional dog. But that's also, you have what they call the terrible twos. And if you got patience, and that's a lot of it, you have to let the dog work the stuff out on his own. Sometimes and have to have the patience to do it. But if somebody's got a dog like that and they don't have no patience,
it's a lost cause.
You can buy that dog. Get some patience on you and have a really good dog at a 2.5 year old dog when he gets through that stage.
And I mean, and what it comes down to is a person's got to be smart enough to see what tools that dog's still got because they're going to do a lot of stupid crap. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of dogs that ain't got the tools and never will have the tools. You can't put tools in the dog's arsenal, but you can bring some of the tools out, if that makes sense. So, yeah. I mean, it comes down to it. I mean, at the end of the day, it comes down to what you want to do with that dog. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm going to come out here and pleasure hunt every night, I'm not going to run that dog off no tracks. You know, because I really don't want to be picking a dog up every mile if I'm out here pleasure hunting and it's all I want to do is just kill coons. But, I mean, at the end of the day, though, if you're wanting to go win something big, you can't have that dog wasting time. You know.
Now, Nick, one thing to what Kyle just said, the way you're training, I'm not going to lie, I'm and sugarcoat it. Training these dogs for some of this competition, it can be a miserable night's hunting.
I never said it was fun.
No, it can be. It can be.
No, that's the thing is, and people, I mean, we sit there and talk about doing these things with these dogs, running them out, cutting them by themselves. I mean, recutting them when you really don't want to recut them. And no, it ain't fun.
And you lose a lot of your buddy hunting.
And if it was easy, everybody would be doing it and everybody would be winning at a high level.
Cody, And I say that because your buddies don't want to go with you because they can't hunt their dog. You can't hunt your dog. And
oh, yeah. I mean, you have to have a lot of alone time.
You learn who don't want to hunt with you.
Mm-hmm. And another thing I think, Nick, on when you're dealing with this stuff on these dogs, Johnny kind of hit on it, and I think Rip was a perfect example of that. He was at that point of hunting by himself, needing to do stuff, but he was in that and we're going to go back. This is that terrible two time.
Yeah,
and
2 years ago.
And it takes Kyle was working, he was doing stuff, and he'd call Johnny, and Johnny and I talked the next day, and he'd be like, I'm telling him, you just got to sit tight. He's not figured that out yet. He's going to, because we already knew he had the tools for it. And he just kept on and kept on, and then next thing you know, it's like, bam, he finally got it. And then he started, and his was like in layups. And when he started doing it, it was just like, okay, you expected him to treat every single coon down a fence row or down in a hollow, whatever. He had no issue.
Yeah, and the thing is that dog is going to give you glimpses of what he can do. Correct. He may not do it every night, but he's going to show you every now and then what he can do, which is what that's meaning is there's got to come a point in time where you've got to make a choice. You let him keep doing it, or you let him keep trying,
mm-hmm.
or break him from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you got to be, I guess, smart enough to know when to do that and when not to do it.
Yep. And one thing I'm thinking of that, though, is kind of like where you were in that situation, is like what Nick's talking about, is having somebody to bounce them things off. You were doing it live action. You would call, get Johnny out of the bed while he was in Chattanooga, and like, here's what he's doing. And somebody that's seen it and dealt with it,
they
may push you right along and say, that dog's probably about to start doing this.
And an example of that, he treated a few layups as a young pup, and it was a layup. And then he quit doing it for a little while, and he was just running some good tracks, and then he started trying to tree layups again.
Well, see,
he was acting like a fool doing it.
He mm-hmm. got to them points that it was easier running small tracks, quick tracks, than it was layups.
Yeah, and the example I like to put for that is it didn't take him long to figure it out. Once he tried to do it, 2-3 weeks to a month, he was rocking on layups. That's my advice. There's got to come a point in time. If they're going to figure it out, they're going to figure it out pretty quick. You got to have a time zone. You can't let a dog try to tree layups for 6 months, because then you just wasted 6 months of that dog's life when you could have had him broke off of it in a month or 3 weeks and had him back. Because it comes down to it. If a dog can't do it, a dog can't do it.
Yeah, you're going to have to be able to make those evaluations of this particular thing that dog's trying to do. Is that dog going to be capable of?
And it's all about the style of dog you want, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you want a dog that is an average dog at training layups, an average dog at running track, or do you want a dog that's exceptional at one thing, and that's one thing you have to focus on?
I don't like one that's average. I always loved it back in the day when my dog was the one that was giving that big dying locate when nothing else was open, because then you knew, go ahead and start putting the plus points on the paper or loading the gun, because you knew what you were going to see when you got there.
Yeah. And I tell you something else that helps that layup ability. You got to take them to places where these coons that's laid up.
And know which way you're cutting your dog.
Yeah. I mean, nobody thinks about that anymore either.
I've seen it so much, and I've seen it in some pretty, what I call, exceptional handlers that are ignorant to the wind.
Well, that's what I was about to hit on.
I mean, I've been in some casts with some guys that's, want some exceptional money. I mean, when he gets over $100,000, I call that exceptional. And you ask them which way they're cutting for the wind, they don't know what you're talking about. And then they wonder why their dog's 2.5 miles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know,
those are the things to pay attention to. And I'll give credit to our buddy Dan up in Illinois. I've never been in the woods with somebody that keeps up with. Now, he keeps me lost because he's like, the wind's coming out of the northwest. I'm like, dude, you done got me turned around. But if it's a bad night and you got a dog like Rip, for example, that's good at layups, Dan was like, oh, the wind's coming out of the northwest or the southeast a certain way. He's like, we need to go in this way. And lo and behold, you may walk down through there and Rip may tree 5 coons in short order, because he's put that dog in that situation to help work on that ability that you're working.
And it all comes down to knowing your dog. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the way I look at it is hunting by yourself helps you know your dog too. When you're out, I mean, we all do it. I mean, I enjoy hunting with people, and what I would stress is when it's time to hunt with friends and buddies is when that dog's finished, and you just turn him loose and he does what he does. Because when you're sitting on a tailgate,
I mean, how many times do you go hunting with, especially if you're young and you hunt with your buddies, and everybody's quiet and watching their dogs? Mm-hmm. Not very
another
often.
Another thing is,
not very often.
Your buddies' dogs are just, a lot of them just got dogs. So if you got a young dog coming on, and that dog's doing stuff it don't need to be doing, your dog's with it, then you got problems. You got more problems.
Oh, yeah. I mean, your dog's only going to be as good as the dogs that you're hunting with.
That's right.
That's a hard thing on training, though, especially for young people that's getting in, because your buddies, you want to go. That's the big thing about and
best advice I can give them is quit being scared of the dark.
Yep.
I mean, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then, like I said, too, it comes down to when they're I mean, what do you want to do with your dog? I mean, if you want to keep hunting with your buddies for the next 20 years, well, by all means, go hunting with them. But if you're wanting to go win a hunt here in 6 months, you need to tell them I'm going hunting by myself.
Mm-hmm. So that's some of our thoughts on that. Did we beat that one to death, or is
we beat it with a rubber hose?
We missed it totally.
Y'all covered a bunch of stuff there, and one thing I have learned with messing with dogs over, I'm 38 years old, and I've been messing with from bird dogs to coon dogs to bear dogs since I was probably 5 years old with my dad and with the bird dogs. But one thing I've learned, and I tell people all the time, is that I've learned more in my last two jobs. I was in a leadership role, and I've learned more about leadership from dogs than I have any other thing, because they can't tell you what they are feeling or what they are doing or what. You have to figure that out for them, and you have to figure. And a lot of good dog men have ruined the potential of a lot of good dogs because you can't be scared of that. You've got to look at what you're dealing with and the issues you're dealing with. Just like my bear dogs is a little different, because I might let a bear dog grub on a track, and because just like y'all were saying, it might be a slow night in December here in North Carolina. You might be trying to put on a track of a bear that walked there 12 hours ago. And if you don't never give him the opportunity, he won't never learn how to move that track enough, because that bear has walked and bedded down. You're trying to catch him in the bed somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it's different. And to where now I'm trying to get away from that, but into training something that is more of a competition style. And y'all touched on a lot of good points, and with the, especially hunting with your buddies, there's a lot of nights now I don't hunt with anybody. It's just me and the dogs, and it's a lot of lonely nights, but it's a lot of nights. If you want to get out and clear your head, you can sit there, and I'll pick on him a little bit. Mr. Lewis, LW's daddy, the first night I ever hunted with him, I walked off from him. And we were actually trying a dog out. It was my buck dog that's off of Nitro, Jimmy Reese's black and tan, and we were trying him out, and I had walked off. And LW walked over to me and asked me, he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to hear this dog. And he said, well, he's loud. I said, not as loud as your daddy. And so, but poor old Mutter Scooter.
Another thing, though, something dad done this years ago when I was little. Dad would drag us all the country in the big mountains. These real bad nights, light snow on the ground. On his young dogs, he would let one beat a trap for a couple hours. No, but if it's a good night, pretty night, he wouldn't. He'd go in and move that dog out of there, his younger dogs. He said they learn how to move them cold tracks on them nights like mm-hmm. that. Give them a chance to.
Yeah. And the best thing to do with the young dog, too, is you need to set that dog up for success and not failure. If it's a crappy night, full moon, and you're hunting a nine-month-old puppy, don't take that dog to the woods.
No. By itself,
you're going to do better good with that dog sitting in the kennel and you going out there and petting on it for 15 minutes, and you will be cutting him loose.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, they're that, you know, coon hunters want to go, and we have to go when we can go, but that's a big deal. You got to know when it's not the right time to turn them loose.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
Times you shouldn't do it.
And I mean, and also, too, is going back to competition hounds, when it comes down to it and you're getting a dog that you're thinking that you're getting ready, he's potential to win competition hunts, you need to sit down and write down his pros and cons. What's the dog good at and what's he not good at? If he can flat fly through the country and bang a hot coon, you probably don't want to hunt that dog between December and February in hunts. He'll be more of an edge runner in May. I mean, because you look at it, there's very few dogs that run the circuit that win 12 months out of the year.
Yep.
Except the one that just won the TOC, then some trucks, then the
world. We call them freaks where I come from. And that's why they sell for $40,000, $50,000, and $60,000.
I like John's description of the Michael Jordan effect because he was the greatest, and that's kind of where she's at.
Yeah, I mean, and what he was talking about, that Michael Jordan effect, is he looks for them dogs that's got them tools that he can bring out, you know. And that's what it comes down to. You've got to know your dog's tools.
And he said something that I hadn't really thought about when I was listening to that conversation on them talking up right there. You know, that dog there is one with multiple handlers. I've seen dogs that I could hunt, let's say example, Jason or Johnny couldn't hunt. She wouldn't perform with them. Or dogs they had that wouldn't perform with me.
Yeah, you got to know the dog.
Yeah, you're right.
You got to know the dog.
But of all them handlers, there's going to be that one.
Yep.
That dog just clicks with.
Yep.
I mean, it's the same way with like Rip. I mean, how many people's won cast with him? There's been a handful of people win a cast with Rip. There's always going to be that one person that dog just clicks with. And it's just like with friends. We've all got friends.
Mm-hmm.
But there's normally that one or two that are just your best friends. Yep. The same way with dogs and a handler.
Yep. What's some other questions that we can beat up?
So since we're on track, we'll hit on what is your stopwatch set on running one off a track on a good night?
Depends on where you're at in the country.
Yep.
If I'm sitting in Illinois and it's June, there's plenty of coons on the grounds. When that dog opens his mouth, he has got 10 minutes to have that sucker wooded or he's getting pushed. I mean, because there's no exception because you can – and we're talking about Illinois. You can go over and beat that dog off that track, and in 300 yards, he's got one jammed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no exception. But now if you're talking about in Tennessee, November, I mean, the best way I can look at it is the best dog that your man can have is when that dog strikes, he's treated for 15 minutes. But common sense has got to tell, though, too. You got to know what type of coons you got and what type of country you're in. I mean, what I would look at, say if I was in Tennessee and a dog strikes a track, he's going to have to be pushing that track. You know, we can't help around here that our rutting boars are running 3/4 of a mile.
A mile, yeah.
You know, but I mean, if that dog's showing progression, I mean, there's really no need to pull it off because you can only make a dog run a track so fast. I mean, mm-hmm. It's just like with people playing basketball, a person can only be so good.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, same way with a dog running his tracks.
So one thing go ahead.
So just throwing this out there for any young listeners that they might just be getting started and have a dog that has some tools and they're realizing that they've got something special, but they really don't know. Because what's special to me, y'all might look at me and say, Nick, that's second rate trash. But What are you looking for?
We say that to Stacy all the time.
Yeah. I get it all the time.
He says it back.
So what are you looking at on that Garmin? I know what I'm looking at when I see him back and forth. What are you looking for to give him a visual picture?
I mean,
for
when they're my advice would be if I see a dog doubling back on his same tracks over and over and over, that dog's confused. Get him out of there.
If he
is pushing that sucker, not necessarily a straight line, but if he's zigzagging and he's not doubling back and he is opening on the ground and showing progression that track, that dog is working that track and he's doing it not fast, but he's doing it the right way.
Now, so, I've seen a lot of dogs that will come, put one in the hole. When the dog runs ahead, they know when coon's cutting off. They'll come back here another one.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the dogs got brains will know that, and they'll come back here another one and go in a different direction with it. And that don't bother me now, but I don't like Kyle said. I don't like one running back and forth painting the car. I call it painting the screen. I don't like one painting the screen.
I was gonna say painting the screen, and Nick, you're like me. So you put it into work, and there for a long time we was doing Kaizens at work, and they'd come in here and they'd start going through processes, and you had a starting point and. You just start drawing lines, and they'd call it a spaghetti diagram, you know, like a spaghetti chart, and you got all this stuff. It's just a mess, and they're always trying to find what all that can you take out, and that's exactly kind of what it looks like he threw spaghetti on a wall, and that, as Stacy said, painting that Garmin. That's not a good thing. If that dog is keep coming back to that area, if that dog is pulling off and treeing, because there's dogs that'll do that. You got a dog that'll he'll take one out of there and tree it, and next thing you know, it's right back in there and hits in a pocket of coons and it's treeing. If it's consistently treeing coons in there in that mess, that's fine. But if you got a big painted up Garmin screen that you got to clear it off to see anything and nothing's getting accomplished, that's when you got a problem.
Yeah, and what you'll come down and learn too is a lot of times that dog is running something he shouldn't be running when he's doing that. Especially down here when you get south of Kentucky, they're running a lot of armadillos.
They are.
A lot of them. I mean, yeah, if you're up north, maybe not so much, but especially down if you're talking about a southern dog.
Mm-hmm. But another thing to that question, I kind of look at that too is what's the dog I'm packing? Have I got a young pup that's just learning? And then I got to make that decision. Should I have had that with an older dog or whatever? Or am I hunting a dog that's already moved out? Because we've talked about it. I was trying that one dog out this summer. That was a dog. It was supposed to be a finished dog that I was bringing in here. And that was the conversation that Hudson and I had sitting up on the hillside that night. This has got to stop. Mm-hmm. This is ridiculous. This dog has no business. And I thought he had broke out of there. And I was all happy, and next thing I know, he's right back in there. I didn't even let him get started till Hudson and I were heading right in there to get his tail out of that mess, because he had done spent way more time, because he was, in my mind, he was a dog that was supposed to be beyond that.
Yeah.
You know, if that had been a 10-month-old or 12-month-old puppy, I might have tolerated it a little bit more. But that particular dog, I had done made my mind up, that dog's supposed to know how to move that track on. And he's not going to be in there. So the minute he came back in, we were in there running him off.
Yeah, and it comes down to also is know what your dog's capable of doing. And you've got to know that pretty quick. I mean, all dogs are not capable of running a track like a racehorse.
Yeah.
I mean, so that dog can only do so much. And you got to figure out pretty quick, is that dog right for you? Mm-hmm. If you want a dog that can blister a track, your dog may not be able to. And you may need to either tolerate what the dog's doing or find a different dog. Mm-hmm. So, but like I said, I mean, when that dog is doubling back on itself, that dog's confused. I mean, and you'll know when that dog's confused. I'm not talking about one time, you know, maybe that coon bounced on that log a different way. I mean, we don't know. We don't run a track. We just follow the dog. But, I mean, if that dog is constantly circling back on itself, coming back down his tracks 100 yards and stuff, that dog, he ain't got a clue what that coon's doing.
Yeah.
Now I have seen it, and we was in a competition that one night in a UKC hunt, and we had one dog split on one side of the creek. Rip was split on the other side of the creek, and both dogs had coons. We walked him off 100 yards and cut him. He turned around. I looked at Kyle and I said, "What is that idiot doing?" Well, he went right back to that same creek, struck off that creek, and drove that track a mile through there,
mm-hmm.
and come treed. But he knowed that track was already there when he treed that first coon, I believe.
Yeah, and the thing I like to say about that, and this is not to toot nothing's no dog or nobody's horns. What percentage of dogs are that intelligent? Very small percentage.
It takes
a smart dog, and hopefully a lot of our listeners has a dog like that. I hope I don't draw you, but I hope y'all got a dog like that. But I mean, you got to think. I mean, too, you got to be smarter than your dog, and your dog can only be so smart.
But now what Johnny said though, that's back to that same point we was talking about. I don't care for that dog coming back into that painted up mess if they're consistently doing stuff with it. He came back into that painted up mess on your Garmin. And he went right back out another way with another. He didn't stay in there.
Right.
Staying in there is your problem.
And something around here we have, put them in holes. They'll put one in a hole and they'll go back and get another one. See a lot of holes around here we do.
Well, especially when they start rutting and then boards are traveling, that's all they're doing is running from den to den. And we can't really describe what Kyle was talking about. It's not what you think of as, you know, like we're used to going up Illinois and Indiana and you run a, you know, and I'm saying this 100 or 200 yards, 400 yeah. yards, and you're slam treed. You may be 800-900 yards here.
Oh, yeah. And
they're traveling from
the thing is, too, is I guess to give an example, you've got to know your woods that you're hunting. You got to know your coon population, and you got to know what the coons are doing. I mean, obviously, we can't know from night to night, but we can have a pretty good understanding if it's full moon and it's 10 degrees outside. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you can have a pretty good understanding of what the coons are doing, and it comes down to what you're hunting. I mean, take it for instance, if I was hunting Rip, he's 4 year old, he's finished dog, he's won all over the country, the dog's capable of putting a performance on. Mm-hmm. I take him to Northern Illinois. I'm hunting him in this block of woods. If he strikes the track and he is not moving to what I think he should be moving it to, I push him out of there because I know what that dog's capable of doing. And you want to keep a dog from getting habits like that, if I should, I guess, put an example on it. Mm-hmm. But and like up there, he's treed average of every 10 minutes with a coon. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I mean, he's treed within every 10 minutes, and you bring him down to Tennessee, and he strikes a track at 300 yards and drives it in there a mile. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you can only do so much for the situation that you're in. But if I was hunting a dog that was going to be a pleasure dog, I'd probably let him get away with a whole lot more things.
But I'm to the point I'm not going to sit all night.
Absolutely.
We're and we can say this because all of us but Stacy, we're blue tick men. But I don't want a blue ticker.
No.
I'm not doing that.
Brent left
down. I don't. What's that?
It's not Brent left down.
So, but I mean, it's one of those things just kind of making those judgment calls. I'm not going to let, even pleasure hunting, I'm not going to sit and go out and say we had a good night hunting and the dogs stayed in a 400 yard circle in one spot barking for 2 hours. That's just not, that's not happening.
I'll probably sell it.
Stacy's gonna get rid of that one. So
I've been there. I went to Arkansas. White River.
Yep.
I had a nice black dog. Tree a truckload of coons. And the dog went hunting over. And then somebody else was barking. And I sold him. Put him in a box, put him up.
Yep. So
but he's a nice pleasure dog now. For a pleasure dog, he's a great pleasure dog. But mm-hmm. that's how he's trained. He was trained to hunt with other dogs.
Mm-hmm. So what about that one? We beat that one up too?
No, that was great. One thing, I need to get you down here so when that dog starts running some big circles, you say, he's been through that area 3 times. I'm going to go run him off next time he comes through. He's running the same track, and you walk in here to run him off, and he's on the sow where she's put her cubs up, and she's running big circles around there. I want to see the look on your face when you walk in here to run him off when he comes by, and he's running that sow.
Well, now, but you just hit on something. It's knowing your terrain, because that's a possibility where you're at. And knowing your area that you're hunting.
Yeah, and I mean, they're not going to do that in Illinois. You're going to go there and make 3 barks, and that sow's going to be sitting in a tree somewhere, you know.
He's talking about a bear.
Oh.
But I'm just saying, but he knows his stuff because that's where
all
he's
at. Thing you're going to be hearing then is bang, 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 and I'll be going up a tree.
Hey, he was getting ready for me to start saying, what's the price on that dog that barks 3 times and puts her up the tree?
Yeah, that's exactly what he's going to do.
Now, Nick, when I say run one off, now everybody does different. I don't go in there and grab my dog, whoop it. Now, I'll get me a long limb. I'll come in where he's at and start beating on the bash on the ground and scolding at him and get him out of there.
And that's the next question I was going to get to.
And another thing is having a dog that you can deal with. I mean, some dogs will shut down, lay down. When it's like that, you might as well put a leash on them and walk them out of there.
Yep.
Go somewhere else.
And like he said of that, your dog's got to be able to take correction. Every dog that has made an exceptional competition dog can take correction.
Yeah.
That's the number one rule.
Down, laying down.
That dog may make a good coon dog.
Yes.
But he's going to have to get away with everything. That dog's got to be able to take correction. And like Stacy was talking about, he goes in there and runs it out. I agree with that. That dog's got to know what he's doing wrong at the beginning. And which, if he's in there beating, you run in there and comes back to your hunting by yourself with one dog. I go in there and I like to start throwing stuff at that dog. I'll yell and start beating on the ground. And I'll start lightly bumping the dog. Not roasting, but lightly bumping enough where he can feel it. And what that's going to do is you're not going to want to go in there and run that dog out for the next 5 years, every time he hits a bad track.
No.
So at some point, you're going to want to train that dog where he knows whenever he starts feeling a little shocking, he knows to move on. Mm-hmm. And so, but I wouldn't start out with that because now you're stimulating a dog and he don't know what he's even doing wrong. But at the end of the day, the dog's got to be able to take correction.
And nobody can tell, everybody different, but me, I tell a lot by dog actions, by a bark collar. If a dog gets shot and they lay down for squalling, that dog's not going to take correction at the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't handle a dog going to take correction. That just won't work for me.
No.
That's like Station as a kid. He didn't take correction very well, no. Obviously.
I got beat all the time. With the church.
And you see dogs that can handle different types of correction. Like I've got dogs that you can holler at, and my TV just come back on.
That's all right.
No. You got dogs that can handle all different types of correction. One might not be able to handle the collar, but you can holler at them. Then you'll have another one that you can holler at, and they'll belly down, and they can handle correction. They can handle a little tickle with the collar, and that's all. And you've just got to figure out, you got to know your dog. And y'all,
they all handle correction.
And if a dog, like you said, can't take a little tickle with the collar, that might bring into another, might be very difficult to be able to train that dog. I mean, by all means, anybody can run one out if you're quick enough. But you're going,
that takes the anybody down to a very few.
Exactly, because you're going to be, because what's going to happen is.
Everybody's not like Kyle.
You know, the first, four, five, six, eight times, that dog ain't going to know why you're coming in there. You know, he's going to know why. I mean, he ain't going to know, so you're going to be able to get your hands on that dog or whatever and be able to correct him. But after a little while, when he sees that light coming, he's going to know.
Yeah.
And, then he'll know why you're there. And if that dog can't take a little tickle from the collar, you'll never be able to, be able to move him out while sitting at the truck.
Mm-hmm. So, any more on that one? Because
I got one more thing. The mood that the dog is in has somewhat to do with the way you can correct the dog. It's going to sound crazy, but I've got two girls. One of them's in college, and one of them's a sophomore in high school. If my youngest is irritated and in a bad mood, I can go in there with a switch or a belt or whatever, and she'll bow up. And it don't matter what I do to her, because she's already in a bad mood. She's got it in her mind that she can handle that. Other times I get her to where she's not in a bad mood and she's not bowed up. I can go in there and I can just talk to her and absolutely destroy her heart just by talking to her. Other times I can go in there, with a belt and stuff like that when she was younger, and correct her and not do a bit of good. But, like I said, I can get her in that mood where she's tender-hearted and break her heart by talking to her. The dog can be in the same way. That might sound crazy, but I guarantee you it's the same way. You can go in there and get one that's amped up, and you go in there whooping, beating, thrash on them, and they'll go on.
Oh, yeah. You're exactly right, because, and I've said it before, too, and people think I'm crazy. That dog knows how you feel as well. That's big thing what I tell people, especially in competition handling. Nowadays, I don't get nervous in cast. I don't care what stage of the hunt I'm in. I just don't get nervous. And you'll see a dog performs better like that. Mm-hmm. If you're nervous and you're showing nervous, that dog is nervous too then. And I've seen a lot of dogs perform better if you relax yourself and not show them emotions. And you'll see that they never relax that dog as well. Same way with Johnny's talking about. Especially if that dog's frustrated already. You can only do so much correcting tonight, and you can only do so much correcting a week, because then that dog's going to start what I call shutting down. Mm-hmm. And when you start seeing that dog needs a break. And what I would do then is I would put that dog back in the best situations you can get him in to do right. Far as what I'm saying is bring him on the best nights for coon hunting and put him in the thickest coons you've got. And then that would build that dog's confidence back up as for safe, as that goes.
Well, if you're frustrated, the biggest thing I've seen, if you're frustrated and you come home from work and you're aggravated and you're going to go coon hunting to clear your head, if you start getting aggravated with that dog, the best thing to do is catch him and put him in the box, because you're going to do something stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not going to accomplish anything that night with him. So,
What I was going to throw out there, Nick, because as you and I talked on the phone when we was kind of talking about doing this, this is not going to be a one-part episode because I'm sure you've got more questions than we've already been an hour. So do you want to
– we got this sucker in the corner beating the crap out of it.
You want to maybe just try to hit one more question at the most for tonight, and we'll carry it on as long as you want to do it. I don't care. We'll do five episodes as far as I care.
Yeah, we've talked pretty much about the track and starting them on track. Let's hit real quick on treeing. And we've all seen it. You get a dog, he starts treeing coons. He's looking good. Then all of a sudden, he's getting into 60, 70%, and he's pulling up. How do you correct that?
Not the way Stacy's over here showing it.
I mean...
You should be sitting here at the table with us. It was one of those. He had you answer before you was finished saying it.
The smackdown.
He was cocking a gun.
That's the cheapest way.
So I'll give you one example on that. And I think it's – you got two things on there. Are you trying to get a dog on a tree or off a tree? Because getting them off of the tree, you got something to work with. Getting them on the tree – you're going to have a lot more time on your hands because you can't, it's hard to
now, are you talking about a puppy or are you talking about like a young dog accuracy-wise?
Well, I'm thinking he's talking accuracy-wise, getting a young dog, aren't you?
Yep. Talking about a young dog that started treeing his own coons and he's looking good. But as we all know, when we're hunting, you're trying to get a young dog in a winning situation. Mm-hmm. You're going to put them in easier coons. But when you start, and we have here where we've had hurricanes and stuff, we have a lot. So I'm going to have to be a little more patient because just like the other night, one of my young plots, he come in there, he was running. The other dog was already ahead of him. He come running in there. They were right on the riverbank, and he pulled up, bam, just slammed a tree. I mean, sounded great, and I was like, what have we got here? And first time he's treed other than being in a coon pen, did really well in there. I walked into him, and just as soon as I saw the tree, I was like, there ain't going to be nothing in this tree. I went there where the coon had come up on the riverbank. You could see the coon, the footprints, where he went up that leaning tree and out the other tree.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those things I can live with that because that dog knew. And that's something that an old dog, he's going to have to circle that area and check it. That young dog just pulled up. Now, is that going to be issues in the future? Very possible.
Mm-hmm.
But here, it's a little different where we have a lot of those leaning trees and stuff. But how do you correct it? And I've had some, the guys that started me on coon hunting, Brad and Justin Brinson, they give me a walker dog. They couldn't do anything with him. Said, here, he's bred up. I carried him for the tree and coons with him. Treed probably five or six coons with him. He was doing good. And then every fourth tree he went by, he'd pull up. And he just got where it was. I mean, if you let him run beside the truck, he was going to tree on every fourth light pole. and I knew it was time to move on from that. But in a real situation, where do you go from there?
So I do have one thing on that, and that's where I was starting to go because I see it two different ways. If you got a dog that's not treeing, you got one thing you're doing. If you got a dog that's treeing too much and they're missing is another. Right or wrong, I've watched my dad do it growing up over the years. You take a young dog that's not treeing. When they started treeing, I like to see a dog tree a little bit, but I don't know how many times the minute that dog, knowing your dogs, the minute that dog would start treeing, my daddy was running to that tree. He would be there almost before that dog was loaded on the wood, petting it up and rewarding it if it had a coon. And next thing you know, they're treeing. Because to me, I mean, it's hard to make a dog tree. They got to be born with it. But then on the other side, I go back to when we were young. I mean, me and Johnny and Stacy, we were, you know, 17, 18, 19-year-old. And Johnny had a young dog that he had the tree ability born in him. And Johnny was putting him in good spots, and he was treeing coon. And Johnny would, like he said on our podcast before, he'd pet raw spots on his side because he was he was praising him up. Dad got his hands back on that dog, and he wasn't doing every fourth tree. He would tree every tree. I mean, and it got to the point that one night Dad was like, "I will break him before this is over." And how many trees did he? Was it 13, 14?
A whole circle.
In one area, he got to the point of the dog didn't even know a light was coming. Dad was turning his light off and sneaking in on the dog in the dark and running him off because he was grabbing every tree. But after he got that worked out in him, this dog went on. I know he won National Plot Hound Dog of the Year. Did he win Isaiah Kidd or no? I mean, they won a bunch of stuff. We're going back 30 years.
And 100 first place wins.
Yeah, this dog was an unreal competition dog. But it was that same scenario. He went from, at a certain point, getting in there quick on that dog was extremely important to get him tree, get that dog tree. And, but that dog had went to, we knew he could tree a coon. I mean, I don't know how many coons Johnny and I, when we first got out of high school and I was in college and Johnny was working second shift, we was hunting every night at 12:30, 1 o'clock when we was turning loose. But Dad had to do some serious work getting him off those missed trees. And it took a lot of work, but once you got it done, it was unreal how good of a competition dog he made.
And that's when we talked, that's where me and Jason hunt a little different. I mean, I told you, I like to follow my dogs. Jason wants to cut them and watch them hunt.
Amen.
And I don't blame him for that. But if I'm that far along, I can't move as fast as they can, so I want to be close enough that I can work something, especially a young dog. I want to try to stay as a young dog. And I'm fat, so I'm slow.
But, I mean,
here's something else you got to remember. Are you wanting a 100% accurate coon dog? Or are you wanting a 75 or 80% accurate one bark tree dog?
Yeah, and I mean, I think I'd like to tell on just a little bit is a dog's, what I've seen is you can help a dog's accuracy ain't going to be getting no better. What I mean by that is that you're not going to bring a 60% accurate dog to a 100% accurate dog. That ain't happening. And what I mean by that is like you'll be able to tell real early if you've got a young dog and he's training some coons and 9 out of 10 trees, he's got a coon. You know, and these dogs are started dogs. But then if you got that same started dog and every 10 trees, he's got two coons. Okay, now you're going to have a slick trim problem. That dog is always going to gamble a little bit in his life. Yeah. You're not going to be able to fix that 100%. But and like Johnny was coming down and what he was talking about, it was, what are you wanting? For instance, for me, if I'm a competition hunter, I would rather have a dog that would grab a track, fly through yonder, throw a big locate, bam, I can hook him every time on it. And have a coon 7 out of 10 trees, 6 out of 10 trees. Then I would a dog that is 10 for 10, but he might work at track for 30 minutes and then check himself 4 or 5 times. And that comes down to being a competition man because I would not mind that dog to make an extra tree in a cast.
Correct.
Because he's moving fast. He's getting things done quick. But it comes down to what style of dog you want.
Now, that trained dog I had, an English dog, he was a coon dog. He was deadly, deadly accurate. But he'd come in here on a tree and hear him he'd locate. But he'd wait a minute, he'd circle. He'd locate, he'd circle. Either he'd go on or he'd sit down. He'd sit down, 99% of the time, he had a coon or a possum. But I broke him off that real quick one night. But he was a coon dog. That's why I call coon dog. But he granddad was 3-year-old. But he was not what I call, go to local clubs, you can win a cast about every night with him. But the bigger hunts, he wouldn't compete because he wasn't as fast as them dogs was. He didn't miss none. He didn't make no mistakes.
He wasn't a gambler.
But he wasn't a gambler. And they would tree 1 or 2 coons on me. And if you're setting 2 coons apiece and they got 2 circle trees, they beat me.
Yeah. And like it also comes down to, I mean, this is the foundation of everything, knowing your dog. If you've got a dog that is known to gamble a little bit, I wouldn't be as harsh on him on missing a coon here or there. But if you got a dog that is accurate, I wouldn't necessarily get.
You don't tolerate.
No, I mean,
much,
I mean, no, not at all, because that dog knows. He knows better. And it's like if you got a kid and he's all the time in trouble, you got to pick which one you get on to him with. If he does something little, you ain't going to just beat the far out of him.
That's me.
You know?
They beat far
out of him. And I mean, and it comes down, I was going to, forgot what I was going to talk about. It's too late. It's too early for that.
Beating the far out of me.
You just talking about picking two different styles.
Oh yeah, it comes knowing your dog. If you gotta know, there's a lot of dogs you shoot coons to them the accurate they get. They thrive off coons, and there's some dogs you go to killing coons to them, they go to missing trees. Mm-hmm. And you've got to know. You just got to know your dog. I mean, everybody don't like a slick tree, and there's a quick and easy way to fix them all. Well, there's two ways actually, but I mean, there's the belt, and then there's lead.
Yeah, man, there's some though that you're not going to pull them off, but with some work, you take that young dog that Nick was talking about. If it's treeing some coon, and then it starts pulling up, you're going to have to start reprimanding.
There's always a reason why. I mean, there's always an answer to all the reasons why a dog's doing something. You know, if you've got a dog from birth, that sucker's just a tree dog. Okay, well, he was born to get wooded. But if you've got a dog and he's treeing coons and he's been very accurate, then all of a sudden he starts treeing slicks. There's a reason why a dog's treeing slicks. It may be the time of year, or it may be he's just getting a little wood happy.
Mm-hmm. Johnny's dog at time was wood happy.
Amen.
But he had to be corrected off of it.
Yeah.
And it's hard. To correct him is hard because then you're running to that dog in the, like Dad was. He was running to that dog in the dark, sneaking in there and running.
Yeah, and that type of correction cannot be done from a Garmin.
No.
It's done with manpower.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, doing that type of correction, he still had enough tree power in him that even though he was corrected, he still loaded fast.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Correct. On a tree.
Correct.
If you ran him off of a tree and there was a coon up the tree 5 feet away from where he just got corrected, he was going to wood again. He couldn't help himself. Yeah,
I mean, he did. But what I'm saying is, even though he did get corrected, mm-hmm. He was not a dog that circled that tree and circled that tree and circled that tree. Mm-mm. When he come on the tree, he was done.
He come all right.
And the house dog we used to have, it didn't make no difference, whatever. When he come on the tree, he was done.
One tree located.
That's why I say a 75% or 80% dog that's a one bark tree dog.
And it's confident.
Is hard to handle in a competition hunt. Where if, like Stacy was talking about his trained dog, he'd circle. And I'm just going to be honest with you, a lot of UKC hunters, and that dog make that first tree, if he ain't circled, if that dog's going to circle that tree again, somebody else is going to be.
They'll steal that tree.
They're going to be getting your plus points.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to, like, back to knowing your dog, is you're correcting that dog too much if he's really second-guessing himself, third-guessing himself, fourth-guessing himself on every tree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for instance, for us, we don't want that. We don't mind if a dog will check himself, but he's going to have to do it very quickly.
And
what I mean by checking himself is, that ain't making a 100-yard loop and come back and trend. That's making a 10-foot, quick, little J, and bam, come treed. That's
up,
fine.
Because
that dog wasted, 4 seconds? Not 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, when we first started, me and Kyle, when he was hunting Rip, I made about every step with him in competition hunts. And when he'd run by, he'd be flying on a track and run through there, and he'd bypass that tree about 10 feet. And he'd make him a J. And when he made that J, you might as well get ready to.
Every time. When I seen that dog make that J, and he'd get a half a locate out, he's on the paper. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I still hunt that dog every night. I don't think I've seen that dog check a tree in a year.
Got a good nose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because now that dog's confidence up, he knows where the coons are at. I mean, now he goes there and he makes a one bark, bam, you dream. So, I mean, like it comes down to knowing your dog.
Mm-hmm.
When in doubt, buy a new one.
That's right.
Can't afford to buy them nowadays.
No.
But now, that's like you said. We're talking on the competition end. Some people love their dog. They want as accurate a dog as they can. And hide hunters years ago, they didn't mind if they dogs checked them trees and checked them trees and checked them trees. But they had a totally different purpose. They didn't care if that dog took 15 minutes to settle in on that tree. If a dog takes 15 minutes to settle in tonight,
you're beat.
Now you're pulling fourth tree.
Yep.
Yeah, you're beat.
I mean, if you and some depend on what hunt registry.
And if like you're in a different registry, you're taking fourth place.
Yeah, because they're training king.
Yeah, you got a difference between a $20,000 payday and a $2,000 payday.
Well, even if you go to the registry that we're talking about, where everybody's got an independent dog, if your dog, even if you got first strike, and if your dog's checking those trees and he's taking that 5 minutes to do that, somebody else's dog, they're not going to be with him.
No, but they've done one or two coons on.
But even if that, if they book their dog while your dog's checking, well, guess what? They're probably 700 to 1,000 yards away, and guess where you're going first?
They're going to them.
It don't matter. You're going to walk right by yours and go over there, and you probably just lost 45 minutes to – you could have lost
– Yeah, and you're going to have to sacrifice something. You can't have – I mean, there's no dog out there named Jesus. Like I said, you're going to have to sacrifice something. If you're wanting an exceptional layup dog, that dog can't run 18 mile an hour. It's impossible. I've never seen a dog that can train a layup coon running 18 mile an hour with his head up. I don't think they make them. But, I mean, you get an exceptional layup dog, it's running 7-8 mile an hour, he'll tree layups all day around. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, and you got to, like, back then, you're sacrificing speed for layup ability. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you...
But if, one thing, and like I said, I go back to this, and I don't like hunting that way, but like Dad would do when we was younger, if you're trying to get that dog's confidence built up for a little while, running into those trees quick, that'll build a dog's confidence pretty quick. I mean, you don't give them much time.
Exactly.
And...
Because he knows if he don't, and that's one thing going back to running the dog off the
thermal
track.
Thermal will help that a lot now.
Oh, yeah.
Thermal, sit back and watch a tree. Thermal, see where they're at, see if it's in there. Before we ever walk in there, before he settles down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it goes back to what when Nick asked the question about running a dog off of a track. If that dog hits up, now I'm talking about, I mean, the dog is well on his way. I'm talking about the dog, he knows how to tree coons. That dog hits up one or two times, and he don't. And I'm talking about in a pretty close vicinity. If he don't tree, he gets ran out immediately. There's no exception for that because now that dog really don't know where that coon is. Now he's just checking trees, and now he's really gonna waste a lot of time. And a lot of times, the more times that dog hits up and does not tree, his accuracy goes through the bottom because now he is really going to gamble on a tree.
That is a good point. Because you do have dogs that do that. It's like they'll
you hear them all the time.
In that little painted up area, and
they'll locate every tree in there. Yeah, they'll locate and chop, chop, and go to the next tree. Locate and chop, chop. That dog ain't got a clue where that coon is.
And to that point, Nick, that is a very good point. Of you got to learn the dog, and you got to make some decisions. If you're going to competition hunt, you cannot have that hound dog.
No.
You are going to have a dog that you're at least 95% confident on that when it loads, whatever its load up is, whether it's got a distinct locator, whatever, you got to be able to bank on it. Because if you don't, you will not be successful in competition.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, what it takes to win hunts is speed and accuracy. Mm-hmm. Those are two things you need. You got to be fast and you got to have coons. If you got them two things, you will make money. Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder said than done, but that's all, man. That's what you need.
But now finding them dogs are not that. It's not easy to get them to there. But I mean,
no.
There's nothing better though than being on competition, nerve wracking or not nerve wracking, when you've got that dog that the moment it loads, you can take that sigh of relief every time because right, wrong, or indifferent, it's going to be right where you put it on paper.
Yeah, and that's a good feeling to have when you've got that dog. It does take a lot of nerves off the handler.
Yeah.
You know, when that dog lets that one bark out, you can dream every time.
And you ain't got to be worried about it. I'm about to take mine. It's because they're going on. That's
– And I would say –
I tend to find a lot of those kind.
Yeah, and I would hit on something just very briefly. I know this wasn't a question, but don't put your dog in a hunt till he is ready. That's the worst thing you can do to a young dog is start putting him in cast because you cannot correct on a dog.
Yeah, it's true. So any more on – we want to talk about that more. If we do, we'll have to save that thought, Nick. We'll probably have to call this one complete pretty quick. We're going to be an hour and a half.
Yeah, I lost train of thought there for a little while because all I could picture in my mind was y'all naming a dog Jesus.
That's what
Stacy and Stacy Hamlin at hollering, strike Jesus.
That's exactly where I was going with my mind too.
We need to get one cop like Jesus.
I might have us one.
But I like this format that you had in mind. I mean, because it makes you go back and think about some stuff, and we don't always agree.
No, as a group, and these are a lot of things that we don't think twice about doing these things. This is automatic. Muscle memory for us. This type of training. You know, when we're out there hunting, dog starts beating into banging. All of a sudden, the only thing you see of me is my light flying through the woods because I'm headed off. And a lot
I wasn't kidding about that one podcast that a few back when we were talking about our hunt up in Illinois. Was at that hunting that Pro Classic, and he was going after the dog. I was screaming at him, "Do not leave me! You got the tracking unit. There's nobody else with me, and I am 400 miles from the house. I have no idea where the truck's at."
Yeah.
I'm trying to follow you, and I cannot keep up.
And before we do shut this down, I would like to say, if you are capable, leg work with a switch or a belt is the best way to train one.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. You cannot beat it. If you can do it, the quicker you can run into that dog and he sees you personally,
mm-hmm.
that's the best way. I know a lot of people can't, whether you're young or old.
That's why you take somebody like you with them, and you're the guy.
But I'll tell you something, Nick. Remember, though. You know, like I said, as a group, we don't all agree on the same thing, but sometimes my ways don't work. And I'll call John, and I'll call Kyle, and like, "Hey, how you do this?"
I thought he was going to say, "Sometimes, as in all times, my ways are the best."
It could be, yeah.
You know. Hey, now he's just saying this, just sugarcoat everything.
That's what it is.
Dogs can be like children. You need a good support group. Sometimes it takes a village to train one.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, another thing, we'll get into this on some more of the other ones, and everybody cannot do that. We could not do that most of our lives now. Thankfully, we're blessed. We're able to is being able to travel.
Yeah,
put that dog in situations. And we're located in a spot where it's not too far to get to those places, but there's certain things for competition that we need these dogs to do that we cannot put them in those situations here. That's why you hear us talking all the time about, hey, we've been up in Illinois or whatever. We have to go to some of them places to work on them dogs because you're not going to do it here.
If you ever correct a dog, you need to put him right back in a situation where you can reward him for something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because you got to be able to ease that dog's mind.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
rewarding, buddy. I'll fill his mouth.
And I'll just give a shout out. You know, we appreciate you coming on and doing this. We really mean that. We appreciate Cajun Outdoors. You guys have been great to us, and I think this is a good format that we'll bring stuff back to our minds. And hopefully, you know, some of these listeners, younger listeners especially, that's wanting to get in, it'll help give them some ideas and stuff of not getting distraught and wanting to give up because there's going to be a lot of work involved with it at times.
I mean, and a big thing I'd like, just right before we knock this off, and not saying our ways are always right, but we've got fruits to prove it. And you've got to know, too, I could say to anyone, be careful of who you get your advice of how to train a dog from. You don't want to get advice from a man that ain't won nothing or ain't ever had a real good dog. If you see a man winning every weekend, he's doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got something going. So that's another thing is just watch you get your information from.
I mean, that's like the podcast we did with Cheyenne Cummins. I respect him a lot. I think the man's a heck of a dog trainer. I've went back and re-listened to several of those because he had some things that he pointed out that I'd kind of lost track of. It's like, boy, that's as Nick says, being a student of the game, I've had to go back and listen to that. Like, I know better than that, and I wasn't doing that. Those were good points,
valid points. And it's hard to argue with a truck winner, a world champion, and an Autumn Oaks winner.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, I mean, you're exactly right.
And another thing is these older guys that do a lot of hunting, if you sit down, if they'll talk to you, don't be out telling all the secrets.
No.
I mean, keep it to yourself because they're not going to tell you and tell everybody else. If they're willing to sit down and talk to you and tell you how to do things, fix problems, keep it between the guns.
And don't sit and disagree with them to their face or whatever. Yeah. Their way may not be what you – but it's worked for them.
But listen to it.
Their way might not work today, but you might end up using it tomorrow.
Absolutely.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And he may – and while I was – say he may tell you 20 things, that you think's wrong, but that one, there might be one
it
thing
made it all worth it.
That made it all worth it. That thing is like with this little episode right here. All this information might be helpful, but there may be one little bit piece in there that could fix your dog.
Mm-hmm. You got anything else, buddy?
I got about two more pages, but we'll get to that at another time.
Perfect, perfect. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening to another episode, and obviously this one's going to carry on.